Lucille suspected that despite the air of camaraderie that existed between Carnovan and his partners, Devers and the other two men, Stokes and Hardy, the Englishman didn't fully trust them. Carnovan made a point of coming to the inn for a drink every time he was in Marshall. He was friendly with Lucille, but never treated her with less than the proper respect. They became friends, nothing more. Although after a while Lucille had to be honest with herself and admit that she did find him attractive. There was nothing wrong with that, though, she told herself. She would never be unfaithful to Corey, no matter what the temptation. She loved him too much for that to ever happen. By mid-July, East Texas lay under a sultry blanket of heat that never lifted, not even at night. In the small upstairs room she shared with her aunt, Lucille tossed and turned in her nightdress trying to sleep, willing a cool breeze to drift in through the open windows. But sleep would not come, and the thin curtains over the windows hung limp and motionless, unstirred by even the faintest breath of air. Mosquitoes buzzed around Lucille's ears, threatening to drive her mad. She couldn't slap at them or wave her arms to drive them away because that might wake up Mildred, who somehow was able to sleep in these deplorable conditions. Finally giving up, Lucille slipped carefully out of bed and went to the window, pushing the curtains aside to peer out into the darkness. Somewhere nearby, a dog barked furiously, disturbed by something. Lucille expected to smell a skunk, since there were plenty of them in the woods, and they often caused the local dogs to raise a ruckus by wandering around the settlement after dark. But when she took a deep breath, there was no scent of polecat. Something else had stirred up that canine commotion. She didn't think anything else of it, knowing how easily a dog could be prompted to bark. But then, a few moments later, movement below in the inn's rear yard caught her eye. She leaned forward, parting the curtains a little more. A shape emerged from the shadows under the trees and started toward the inn, moving unsteadily. It was a man, she realized. His steps said something furtive about them, and Lucille wondered if he might be a thief who planned to break in the back door of the inn. The possibility made her breath catch in her throat. She thought she ought to go downstairs and warn Nolan and Dewhurst. It was long after midnight. The inn was dark as everyone slept, or at least tried to sleep. A prowler might be able to get in and out without disturbing anyone. Lucille hesitated a moment, trying to decide what to do, and in that moment something happened to make up her mind. The figure crossing the yard stopped, wavered back and forth for a second, and then plunged forward on its face. Through the open window, Lucille heard him groan faintly. He wasn't a would-be robber at all, she realized. He was injured. She turned and went to the door of the room, not hesitating now. Hurt as he was, the man outside posed no threat. She would go out and see if she could get him into the inn. Then she would send Fred running for the doctor. Fred and Alan Carter shared a room just down the hall, paid for by the wages Alan earned, working in a nearby livery stable. As Lucille hurried down the hall, she thought about stopping at the Carter's room and waking them, so they could help her get the injured man inside. That could wait, though, until she determined his condition, she decided. The siege of Vicksburg had given her some practical nursing experience. She could clean and bandage a bullet wound, set a broken bone, even sew up a bad cut if she had to. She might not even need to send for the doctor, she thought, as she went down the stairs and through the kitchen, to slip outside through the rear door. She paused just outside the door, listening. No more sounds came from the man on the ground, who was a sprawled, dark shape, some 10 yards from the inn's back door. He was either unconscious or dead, Lucille thought. She hoped he wasn't dead. She had seen corpses before, more than she liked to remember, but looking death in the face was never pleasant. She took a deep breath, gritted her teeth, and started forward across the yard. She was about halfway to the fallen man when she realized she was wearing only her thin nightdress. She should have taken the time to put on a robe, although when dealing with a possibly badly injured man, a young woman's decorum was less important than usual. When she reached his side, she went to one knee and put out a hand to touch his shoulder. He stirred a little when she did, telling her he wasn't dead after all. She was grateful for that. He was lying face down. She grasped his shoulder with both hands and as gently as possible rolled him onto his back. A three-quarter moon floated overhead. It gave enough light for Lucille to be able to recognize the features of Finn Carnovan. She gasped in surprise. A large dark stain spread across the right side of Carnovan's shirt. He was wounded all right, not sick or drunk, which were other possibilities she had considered. She touched the shirt. The blood was still wet and warm. It hadn't been long since the injury was inflicted. With him senseless like this, she would have to have help moving him. He was too big, weighed too much for her to lift him to his feet alone. She was about to straighten and turn to go back into the inn and fetch Alan Carter and Fred, when Carnovan groaned again. His eyes flicked open and tried to focus on her face. Suddenly, his hand came up and gripped her wrist.
Miss Brennan?
His voice choked with pain. Lucille leaned closer over him.
Don't move, Mr. Carnovan, she told him,
trying to keep her own voice level and calm so he wouldn't know how shaken she was.
Just lie there and rest. I'll get some help and send for the doctor.
Judging by the amount of blood he had lost, his injury was beyond her ability to care for it.
No. Get out of here.
Yes, but I'll be right back. Don't worry.
He's behind me. The one who did this. Close. Behind me.
Lucille's eyes widened as she realized what he meant. Until this moment, she hadn't even considered the fact that someone had done this to Carnovan, someone who obviously had been trying to kill him, someone who still posed a threat. The rush of footsteps warned her. She reached down to Carnovan's waist as another shape lunged out of the shadows under the trees. Her fingers closed around the leather-wrapped grip of the bowie knife and pulled the weapon from its sheath as she came to her feet. She meant to wave the knife at the man rushing toward her and Carnovan and shout out a warning so he would stop and back off. But the man was too close, and he was in no mood to back off. Lucille heard a growled curse. Moonlight glinted off the blade as she thrust it out in front of her. The attacker ran right into the blade. Lucille felt the razor-sharp tip shear through the man's shirt and penetrate the flesh beneath. It slid easily into the man's body, deep into his chest. The impact of the collision knocked Lucille back a step, but she managed to retain her grip on the knife. Something hot and wet trickled across the back of her hand. The bearded face of Patrick Devers contorted in agony as he stared at Lucille from a distance of little more than a foot.
My God, he said hoarsely. You've killed me, girl.
Then blood that was black in the moonlight gushed from his mouth, and he sagged forward, forcing Lucille to spring backward as he collapsed at her feet.